Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Developing countries are buckling under high debt and exorbitant borrowing costs that prevent them from reviving their economies, UN Chief Antonio Guterres said on Thursday. Speaking at the Paris Finance Summit, Mr. Guterres said that many African states were spending more on debt repayments than on desperately needed healthcare, and that over 50 countries were either in default or dangerously close to it. The UN chief called for a debt relief mechanism that supports payment suspensions, longer lending terms, and lower rates to make borrowing more affordable for poorer nations, as well as increased access to liquidity for developing countries via the International Monetary Fund's special drawing rights. Mr. Guterres also repeated his urgent call to end fossil fuel subsidies and increase climate adaptation funding for vulnerable countries. Taken together, these steps would help to beat poverty and hunger, uplift developing and emerging economies, and support investments in health, education, and climate action, he said, stressing that the measures would enable a giant leap towards global justice. Staying with the UN Secretary General, who has expressed deep concern over the mounting toll of violence in the occupied Palestinian territory, Mr. Guterres' deputy spokesperson said that the UN chief condemned all acts of violence against civilians after Tuesday's killing of four Israelis by two armed Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and subsequent acts of vandalism by Israeli settlers in Palestinian villages around Nablus and Ramallah. Mr. Guterres also expressed concern about the killing of seven Palestinians, including two minors, as a result of an Israeli security forces operation in Jenin on the 19th of June. He called on Israel to abide by its obligations under international humanitarian law. The two Palestinian children killed in Jenin were students at schools run by the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, which is in the grip of a financial crisis threatening its survival. The agency's head, Philippe Lazzarini, warned on Wednesday that without immediate additional funding, UNRWA will be unable to maintain operations beyond September, threatening the closure of over 700 schools and 140 health centers, leaving millions of Palestine refugees on the brink of starvation. The right to keep personal health data private is increasingly under threat in our digital world, with potentially devastating consequences for already vulnerable people, a UN-appointed independent rights expert told the Human Rights Council on Thursday. The Special Rapporteur on the Right to Health, Tlaleng Mofokeng, warned that technology enabled easy sharing of sensitive health data of adolescents, migrants, and people whose sexual orientation or health status was subject to discrimination. Accessibility of information through digital tools should not impair the right to have personal health data treated with confidentiality, Ms. Mofokeng insisted. Ms. Mofokeng highlighted the potentially dangerous use by state and non-state actors of mobile communication, geomapping, and search history data against people seeking contraception or abortions in jurisdictions which criminalize these health services, resulting in prosecution, arrest, and further stigma. Dominika Tomaszewska-Mortimer, UN News.
For radio as secular as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We warn about the various ways white Christian nationalism is intruding.
Then speak about its connection to Catholicism with Mary Jo McConaughey,
author of Playing God, American Catholic Bishops and the Far Right.
Good afternoon, listeners. I hope you're having a wonderful Friday. It's TGIF day. That's right. This, thank goodness, it's Friday. If you're at work, you know, listen to this here at your lunch hour and consider taking off early. Taking off early is not a bad thing. Don't endanger your continued employment with your capitalist master, but consider taking off early on a Friday. And as a reminder, don't forget, tomorrow on Saturday, we'll have the Abolitionist Hour, the latest edition. And we lucked out today. We did. I got up late, and I was very lucky to get this morning's Democracy Now! Headlines to you. It was a minute by minute deal getting these this morning's Democracy Now! Uploaded in time for this show today. I hope you enjoy the program. Stay tuned. Remember Saturday, and enjoy the show. Tristan, Take it away to Democracy Now! Headlines.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden welcomed Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi to the White House Thursday, praising a new era in U.S.-Indian relations on Modi's second day of a lavish visit to the U.S. that's been condemned by human rights advocates. The two leaders announced a series of new initiatives, including a landmark deal for General Electric to build military jet engines in India. Modi delivered a speech to a joint session of Congress, was later feted at a state dinner with the President and the First Lady, Jill Biden. In a rare occurrence, Modi accepted questions from journalists during a news conference with President Biden. Wall Street Journal reporter Sabrina Siddiqui, who is Muslim, pressed Modi on human rights concerns and asked him what steps he's taking to improve the rights of Muslims and other minorities in India and press freedom there. It's believed to be the first question Modi took from a journalist at a news conference since 2015.
We have always proved that democracy can deliver. And when I say deliver, this is regardless of caste, creed, religion, or gender. There's absolutely no space for discrimination.
In Sudan, residents began fleeing the southwestern city of Kadugli Thursday as a new front opened between Sudan's army and the rebel group known as the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, North. Sudan's army says fighters with the group broke a longstanding ceasefire agreement this week and attacked Sudanese military units. In the capital, Khartoum, heavy fighting continues between Sudan's army and the rival paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. Elsewhere, activists say they've identified 500 bodies across the city of El Jenena, the capital of Sudan's western Darfur region. Witnesses say thousands more bodies remain uncollected in the city's streets after paramilitaries and allied Arab militias stepped up attacks on non-Arab residents of the region. Aid workers say tens of thousands of people fleeing the violence for neighboring Chad have also faced violence and sexual assault. Laura Locastro, the UN Refugee Agency's representative in Chad, spoke to refugees who survived the journey.
They described terrifying scenes in which everyone had to flee for their lives. There were massacres, and as they fled, they sometimes, unfortunately, had to leave behind little children who couldn't run. People were injured, and the elderly.
Authorities in Greece have rescued 145 migrants who are found stranded on an island in the Evros River on the Greek-Turkish border. Thursday's rescue came as shocking details continued to emerge about how Greek Coast Guard officials failed to save hundreds of migrants who drowned last week after their overcrowded fishing vessel sank off the Greek coast. El País reports Greek authorities were tracking the ship for more than 12 hours, never activated a rescue operation, even after the ship's engine broke down. In the Atlantic Ocean, rescue crews have called off a multinational, multi-million-dollar operation to locate five people aboard the missing Titan submersible after debris from the vehicle was discovered Thursday near the wreckage of the Titanic. Engineers say the sub's operator, Ocean Gate, failed to properly account for design failures in the submersible, which was never certified to withstand the crushing pressures of the deep ocean. It's believed the sub's pilot, OceanGate CEO Stockton Rush, died instantly along with four passengers who paid $250,000 each for the adventure. This is Rush speaking in a 2022 documentary by a Mexican filmmaker.
I'd like to be remembered as an innovator. I think it was General MacArthur said, you're remembered for the rules you break. And, you know, I've broken some rules to make this. I think I've broken them with logic and good engineering behind me, the carbon fiber and titanium. There's a rule you don't do that. Well, I did.
The Wall Street Journal reports a top-secret U.S. Navy acoustic detection system designed to spot enemy submarines heard what the U.S. Navy suspected was the Titan submersible implosion just hours after it began its voyage. In climate news, Beijing is suffering its warmest June heat wave on record, with high temperatures in the Chinese capital Thursday climbing above 41 degrees Celsius or 106 degrees Fahrenheit, its hottest June day since records began. In Mexico, a searing heat wave has driven record demand for electricity, with reports of blackouts in a dozen states this week. The extreme heat extends into the United States, where parts of Texas and other southern states face excessive heat warnings into next week. This comes as smoke from massive wildfires continues to trigger air pollution warnings in Canada and parts of the U.S., with unhealthy air quality forecast for Chicago and much of Wisconsin today. The Union of Concerned Scientists reports half the U.S. population nation has faced an extreme weather alert so far this year. Meanwhile, a new study published in the journal Nature Sustainability finds Earth's ecosystems are degrading from global heating even more rapidly than previously thought, with one in five ecosystems, including the Amazon rainforest, at risk of passing a crucial tipping point by the end of the century. In Mexico, human rights advocates are demanding justice for two environmentalists assassinated in separate attacks in the state of Mexico earlier this month. Álvaro Arvizu and Cuauhtémoc Márquez were forest and water defenders who fought against extractivism in the region. Márquez, who was also a beekeeper, was shot dead near his home on June 12th. A day later, Arvizu died after being brutally assaulted by a group of unknown assailants with what appeared to be an axe. Mexico continues to be one of the deadliest countries for environmentalists in the world. The government of France has ordered the shutdown of the direct action environmental group Earth Uprising, wielding powers it previously used to outlaw far-right movements. The order came after the French Interior Minister accused Earth Uprising of carrying out eco-terrorism at several recent high-profile protests. The group responded in a statement, quote, "Trying to silence Earth Uprising is a vain attempt to break the thermometer instead of worrying about the temperature," unquote. The crackdown drew criticism from Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg, who spoke Thursday from Paris.
All over the world, we're experiencing this, not the least, for example, here in France, just the other day, that activists are being systemically targeted with repression and are paying the price for defending life and for the right to protest.
Greta Thunberg was speaking at this week's Summit for a New Global Financial Pact in Paris, where climate activists are demanding world leaders mobilize trillions of dollars to finance a transition to clean energy and a loss and damage fund to help the Global South deal with the worst effects of the climate catastrophe they did not cause. This is Inés Grais, a youth climate activist from Rwanda.
We have recently seen the flooding in Italy, the wildfire in Canada. But the developing world is hit the hardest because they have the least resources to cope. For countries like mine, business as usual is a death sentence.
Back in the United States, the Supreme Court has ruled against the Navajo Nation over claims the federal government has failed in its duty to address the tribe's water rights. Writing for the majority in Thursday's 5-4 ruling, Justice Brett Kavanaugh ruled the 1868 treaty that established the Navajo Reservation said nothing about an affirmative duty for the United States to secure water. The court's three liberal justices, joined by Neil Gorsuch in dissent, writing that the government has a duty to properly manage the water it holds for the tribe. Thousands of Navajo Nation members lack access to running water in their homes, even though the Colorado River runs along the northwestern border of their reservation. And in New York, immigration advocates have vowed to keep fighting after New York Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie refused to hold a vote on legislation that would have allowed undocumented people to enroll in New York's essential plan, government-subsidized health insurance under the Federal Affordable Care Act. The Coverage for All bill had passed the state Senate earlier this month. Both chambers are controlled by Democrats. Nearly 500,000 New Yorkers are currently excluded from Medicaid and the essential plan health care coverage due to their immigration status. To see our interview with New York Assemblymember Jessica Gonzalez-Rojas, who sponsored the bill, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is Carl G. from the Abolitionist Hour, every Saturday, 12 p.m., where we broadcast the news that you won't find on cable. Ever wonder what Gen Z is up to? Have you heard of Generation U? Ever wonder why the old geezers are excited that something's going on since their days of living underground and avoiding the Vietnam draft? We cover these topics on the Abolitionist Hour, and we kind of give you updates on the front, whether it's Atlanta, Minneapolis, St. Louis, Kansas City. We'll keep you updated on news and information on the state of dismal prison conditions and why the Jackson County Jail is not just a stockade. It's a phone company. So join us at the Abolitionist Hour, only on Blog Talk Radio, 12 p.m. Central Standard Time. We'll see you there.
And from the plains of Royal Mead, drunk men came hurrying through. Well, Britannia's Huns with her long-range guns came in through the buggy tears. Back to the glen I rode again, and my heart with grief was sore. For I parted them with valiant whom I never shall see more.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Summertime, and it's happy summer. This is Free Thought Radio, and I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, co-host of Free Thought Radio. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And that was Louis Armstrong playing the George and Ira Gershwin song, Summertime, from Porgy and Bess. Very appropriate this week, at the beginning of summer. The Gershwin brothers were non-religious, and their work, their music, always celebrated the natural world. This is the June 22nd, 2023 edition of Free Thought Radio. Grant Blaschka with Audio for the Arts is engineering the show in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall, the national offices of the Freedom From Religion Foundation here in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF.org, Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're over 40,000 members nationwide, mainly freethinkers, atheists, and agnostics, and we work to keep religion out of government as our secular constitution dictates. And we would love to send you information, including a sample of our newspaper and a brochure about our 45-plus years of achievements in doing that. You can just click the link at our website, ask for info, or you can join us today at ffrf.org.
In the second half of today's show, we're going to talk with a Catholic journalist about how the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops are using dark money, and they are allying with ultra-right evangelicals to try to remake America in their image. Mary Jo McConaughey is the author of the new book, Playing God, American Catholic Bishops and the Far Right.
McConaughey writes about the current schism between ultra-conservative American Catholic bishops and the relatively more, well, I'm not sure if he's compassionate, Dan.
He's relatively more compassionate.
Compared to them, more liberal Pope Francis. He certainly dresses up the religion as being more liberal, but I don't know how liberal he is. The book also talks about the bishop's regressive attitudes toward women's rights, Black Lives Matter, the environment, and democracy. So stay tuned for that interview. And since we mentioned the summer solstice, we should just say we had a very nice little party here, our first post-pandemic event for local members, because they kept getting canceled because of re-emerging COVID, and we kind of gave up for a while, but we thought it would be nice to celebrate the summer solstice with area members and also to finally unveil the beautiful bust of Ruth Bader Ginsburg that was given to us by sculptor Zenas Roudakis. It's in our lobby. You can see it from the front doors. It belongs in a museum. It's just beautiful. And we had a lovely time, and I gave you some assignments, Dan, and they were tough ones. I said, why don't you do a medley of songs that mention summer or the sun, and you made it kind of a guess this tunes. And you came up with a lot of songs.
That was fun, and a lot of the audience knew most of the songs, you know.
Yeah, you were doing that from the piano, I should say.
Yeah, without doing the words. I just, like, in the good old summertime. And
Here Comes the Sun, an obvious one.
And The Sunny Side of the Street, and a couple of Beatles songs.
And then we also unveiled Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and I gave you another difficult assignment.
Well, you wanted me to write like a musical ditty about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and I couldn't come up with anything that was right. But I have some lyrics in progress, which I read yesterday during the party. The current crop of justices are issuing injustices and rendering the Bill of Rights toothless. The ship has lost its rudder, and it should make us shudder to realize our court is now ruthless. So maybe I can find a melody for that.
Well, that might be hard, but I think it was very appropriate. And then speaking of music.
Yes, this week is the anniversary of the birth of the songwriter Richard Rodgers, the composer of more than 900 songs and 43 Broadway musicals. He was born June the 28th, 1902. Richard Rodgers is one of only two people to have won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, a Tony, and the Pulitzer Prize. And Richard Rodgers was an out and proud atheist. We will hear some of Rodgers' music during the breaks today, including Shall We Dance from the musical The King and I, So Long Farewell from The Sound of Music, Surrey with the Fringe on Top from Oklahoma, and I'm in Love with a Wonderful Guy from South Pacific.
Speaking of Richard Rodgers, I just finished Mary Rodgers' memoir called Shy. She was the daughter of Richard Rodgers, and we don't have her in our lexicon of atheist musicians, but she also wrote music and lyrics and was an ardent atheist. And she wrote, for example, Once Upon a Mattress, which is that very funny spoof of Princess and the Pea. It's a musical and fascinating. So we'll have to play more of her music at some point, give her some credit.
Well, can I read the book after you're done?
Yeah, I'm done with it.
And
it's a very excellent book, a gift from our Free Thought of the Day editor, Bill Dunn. So we'll have to get her in that lexicon at fffref.org. So now there's a lot of news.
A lot of news. Let's talk about our legal team has been busy as usual, not just filing lawsuits, but sending letters of complaint around the country. And Sammy Lawrence wrote a letter to a Texas school district, which resulted in a victory. We're pleased to report that the Dickinson Independent School District in Texas will no longer include proselytizing remarks in their future graduation ceremonies. The principal, Billy Smith, gave a speech where she quoted scripture during this year's Dickinson High School graduation ceremony, and she talked about how God created man and woman and has made you the author of your story. So Sammy wrote a letter saying you can't do that. Public school students have a constitutional right to be free from religious indoctrination. So the school wrote back saying that Dickinson ISD will promptly address this concern and will ensure that all future school-sponsored events respect the First Amendment rights of students and their families. Then over in Alabama, we have a complaint. Chris Lyon, one of our attorneys, wrote a letter raising the alarm about a Christian foster farm. There's a group called Freedom Farm that's been seeking taxpayer money to fulfill its Christian mission to construct a new compound, which will include a chapel. The guy said that God laid this on my heart. And so we sent a letter to Jeff Hogg, the president of the Northport City Council, advising that taxpayer funds should not be used to build a Christian chapel or a Christian foster care complex. So we're hoping they will obey the law.
That just went out. And we are getting a lot of graduation prayer complaints, so we expect to have some more victories on those things. But On the national front, we want to point out that U.S. Representative Josh Hawley of Missouri has embarrassed himself and the nation with a very offensive tweet about Juneteenth, which is this Monday, national holiday, and FFRS office closes in observance of Juneteenth. But on Juneteenth, Hawley, who was the guy who put the thumbs up on January 6th when he was walking into the Capitol, he said, "Today is a good day to remember Christianity is the faith and America is the place slavery came to die." And we pointed out that, in fact, America, unfortunately, was the place where chattel slavery came to live for 400 years. And much of that because of Christianity's approving and barbaric teachings about slavery that are based on biblical passages. And we put out a press release on June 20th. You can find it at ffrf.org/news, citing all the Bible verses that bless slavery and have barbaric treatment of slaves and talk about selling and buying slaves and what you can do with your maid servant and so on. And religion's role in slavery has basically literally been whitewashed. And we also pointed out that the doctrine of discovery, a 15th century Catholic teaching adopted in 1493, laid the basis for slavery and the extermination of many Native Americans as well, with the Catholic Church saying that in any land that isn't inhabited by Christians, you could, quote-unquote, discover it, and we know what that meant.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, and then the Southern Baptist Church splitting over the slavery issue.
Yes, and many others, and it wasn't just the Southern Baptists, and we have a lot of documentation if you want to read more about it.
And there's a lot in the Bible supporting slavery, but also there's a lot of obscenity and vulgarity in the Bible. Chris Lyne, FFRF attorney, sent a letter to a Utah school district which is banning books, and we're asking it to ban the Bible. Well, they're going to return the Bible to the school.
Yeah, we've reported that a parent complained about the Bible, obviously partly tongue-in-cheek, because they've removed about 60 books from their shelves, and 37 have been outright banned in Davis County because of a bad law there. And he pointed out that if you're going to take out these other books, you have to take out the Bible because it has much obscenity. We've done backup letters, and there was a huge furor when on May 30th, the school board voted or the school committee voted to remove the King James Version from lower grades. While there were political rallies in Utah, 70 people in Davis County filed an appeal, and so they caved, and they've had threats. And so the Bibles are going back, and so what we wrote them is that, okay, if the Bibles are going back, then all the other books have to go back too, including great literature that has been banned, such as Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye, which is an empathetic book about incest, and contrast that with the horrible defamation of incest victims that you find in Genesis with the defamation that virgin girls would seduce Lot, you know, which has caused, I'm sure, so much victimization of girls. And so anyway, we have an ongoing battle there in Utah.
And they're claiming, the school is claiming, well, the Bible has significant serious value for minors, which outweighs the violent or vulgar content it contains, admitting that it contains it. But we point out that this standard should apply to the other books as well.
And of course, this is happening in other parts of the country, and wherever they remove books for graphic content, they should be removing the Bible, and we will be pursuing that. Then we do have a change of pace, a new billboard going up. It's in Chico, California, with the help of an area member. It is an answer to Little League, which in Chico is intruding God into events for Little Leaguers. And this is a father who has a child. And when they go to games, they are being told to go out into the field, line up, and instructed to recite this player pledge. "I trust in God, I love my country, and will respect its laws. I will play fair and strive to win, but win or lose, I will always do my best." And obviously the bone of contention there is saying, "I trust in God." Up to a third of all adults today have no religion, and almost half of Gen Z children and students have no religion, and this dad's child is being excluded, is made to feel embarrassed and excluded. And when the father went to the Little League and said, this is supposed to be an optional pledge, I disagree with it, but at least when you go to the website, it says this should be optional. You should at least tell children they don't have to participate. And they said, no, that would be untenable. So he came to us and said, let's put up a billboard. And what it says, children over dogma, keep God out of Little League. And it also is a cartoon showing a teacher with In God We Trust on a blackboard, and she's throwing up her arms because she's trying to make it inclusive. So under God, she chalks in Allah, Buddha, Shiva, Yahweh, none of the above. Well, you can't make a religious pledge inclusive. So that's kind of the message.
Well, it's a very attractive billboard, too, all these students staring at this blackboard.
Yeah, all these little kids. So if you happen to be in Chico, you'll find it at Cohasset Road north of Thorn Tree. And if you are have anything to do with Little League, you should join the protest against it. And now coming up, we're going to be talking about an amicus brief that FFRF filed, talk about why we shouldn't say the word passing instead of death. And then we'll hear from author Mary Jo McConaughey, who has written a book called Playing God, American Catholic Bishops and the Far Right.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker. Televangelist Pat Robertson, as we announced last week, has died, but the Christian Broadcasting Network 700 Club that he started lives on. Governor DeSantis of Florida was recently interviewed by David Brody on the 700 Club, who asked DeSantis who would he most likely want to hang out with and have dinner with.
You know, in terms of, you know, throughout history,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I think, like, could I have been there with Jesus' disciples? These are people who Peter's just fishing one day, and all of a sudden, you know, this guy comes up to him, catches all the fish, and says, I want you to be a fisher of men. Come with me. And so these guys all went out, and they dedicated their life to spreading the gospel, and they all were killed for, you know, they tried to kill John. John ended up, you know, being able to survive. But, I mean, the intent was to put him to death, too, to talk about what that was like. I look back at that and would love to have been able to be there with them.
No comment.
So, in other news, the Freedom From Religion Foundation has moved to file a friend of the court brief before the Wisconsin State Supreme Court, opposing the argument by five religiously affiliated nonprofit organizations that they should be exempted from paying into the state unemployment system. We warn in our brief that doing this could have a major far-reaching impact for Wisconsin employees. Consideration of the diocese's purposes instead of the employer's purposes would allow any religiously affiliated organization, including hospitals and universities, to exempt itself from unemployment insurance program. Creating an exemption for the employers would thus have a profound detrimental impact on Wisconsin's unemployment insurance program.
And you can read that news release about that amicus brief or find the amicus brief up at our website under the news link. So go to FFRF.org.
So notice that I said Pat Robertson died instead of passed away.
Yes, you did. And so I give you a little ribbon or a star because I just wrote a blog. FFRF has a blog at freethoughtnow.org, and I and many others on our staff will write opinion pieces from time to time. And this week I put up a plea to banish passing as a euphemism for death. Have you noticed that hardly anyone dies anymore? No, according to their obituaries, they just pass on, or pass away. And sometimes they went to be with their Lord, went home to be with Jesus, or were even ushered into heaven. The dictionary defines an obituary as a notice of death, but death seems to have gone AWOL from current death notices. I did a unscientific poll by looking at 50 recent obituaries here in the Madison-based Wisconsin State Journal, and we're a very secular community, and only 4 of them used the word died. But I am asking you to resist this euphemism. When I Googled it to try to find out more about it, I saw a lot of notices, even Cambridge Dictionary, Collins Dictionary, Macmillan Dictionary, saying that you can say someone passed away if you want to avoid the word died because it might offend or upset someone, or it's a more polite expression for dying. And one of them said that many people think it's a calmer, a gentler way of talking about death because death sounds so final. Well, is there anything more final than death? So as my blog points out, this creeping euphemism stands for more. It stands for death denial in our society, which is religion-based. You know, the idea you would pass on to another world instead of dying.
And you don't have to admit that the person is finally gone forever from your life.
And this also leads to problems where we only have a handful of states that have passed medical aid and dying laws. So in most places in the United States, if you are unfortunate enough to have a terminal illness, no matter how much you are suffering, good luck finding a legally kinder way to die. We treat our pets far better than we treat our beloved human beings. And, you know, the ultimate death denial is really the teaching of the afterlife. And I think that teaching is a very harmful teaching. A lot of people think, oh, heaven's not such a bad teaching. Maybe hell is a bad teaching. But this idea that you get your reward in another world, so it doesn't matter how much you suffer in this one, or it doesn't matter how we treat our environment because the real world is an afterlife. This is a very pernicious concept.
I remember when I was in India earlier this year with Amit Pal, our director of communications, we were meeting mainly with rationalists, talking about how some of the early rationalist people had been killed and martyred for their lack of faith. And the expression they used was, they are no longer with us. They're with us no more. They didn't use the word like
that. But I think that's fine in conversation, but not in a death notice. I still say you got to explain somebody died, when, you give their dates.
Yeah.
You have to be straightforward and not obfuscate and use euphemisms because it really denies the pain and the reality of death. Bertrand Russell wrote, I believe that when I die, I shall rot and nothing of my ego will survive. I am not young, and I love life, but I should scorn to shiver with terror at the thought of annihilation. And I ended my blog by saying that, a fool's paradise is not a paradise, it's willful self-deception, and quoted a stanza from Emily Dickinson. She wrote that it will never come again is what makes life so sweet. Believing what we don't believe does not exhilarate. So it doesn't really comfort you if you're just denying it. So please banish passing.
So we're going to take another break, and here we're listening to So Long Farewell from Richard Rodgers. But we're not going to be done with the show. We're going to be back to interview a Catholic journalist, a very well-respected Catholic journalist, Mary Jo McConaughey. She's author of the new book, Playing God, American Catholic Bishops and the Far Right. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
Oh, we're meeting at the courthouse at 8 o'clock tonight. You just come in the door and take the first turn to the right. Be careful when you get there. We'd hate to be bereft, but we're taking down the names of everybody turning left.
Oh, we're the John Birch Society, the John Birch Society, here to save our country from a communistic plot. Join the John Birch Society, help us fill the ranks. To get this movement started, we need lots of tools and cranks.
Welcome back to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and that is the Chad Mitchell Trio. I grew up listening to them. I remember them singing this song, the John Birch Society. The reason we're playing it is because our guest today mentions that song in her new book about the ultra-conservative right wing in America. And actually, just to take a trip down memory lane, we played some John Birch Trio songs on the debut of Free Thought Radio.
Chad Mitchell songs
way back in 2006 when Free Thought Radio first debuted. They were poems by Yip Harburg that Chad Mitchell Trio had put to music.
And I'm Dan Barker, co-host of Free Thought Radio. Mary Jo McConaughey is a prominent Catholic journalist in the United States. She's been a war correspondent. She covered the Central American insurgencies in the 1980s. She's written a number of books, including The Tango War, The Struggle for the Hearts, Minds, and Riches of Latin America During World War II. And she wrote the multiple award-winning book, Maya Rhodes, One Woman's Journey Among the People of the Rainforest.
McConaughey's newest book, just out this year by Melville House Publishing, is called Playing God, American Catholic Bishops and the Far Right, in which she tells the story of how U.S. bishops are using dark money and allying with ultra-right evangelicals in an attempt to make America a Christian nation, especially a Catholic Christian nation. Mary Jo McConaughey is joining us by phone from California. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, what a pleasure to talk with you. I really enjoyed your book. It's very incisive. It's quite broad. It has deep history, especially of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And it includes many biographical sketches of the major right-wing Catholic and evangelical players who are still waging a decades-long battle to reshape our country in their image. So, Mary Jo, what prompted you to write this book?
Well, I was watching TV on January 6th, like many other people in our country, and I have been through coups before, having covered Latin America as a journalist. And as I watched and as I heard ex-President Trump calling on his followers and clearly not recognizing the legitimacy of the election, and watching the crowds gather outside the Capitol, I said to myself, this is a coup. I recognize this. Indeed, it was a coup that did not succeed. But what really chilled me was the camera going among the crowd and the Christian symbols that I, as a Catholic, I'm a believer, had always considered sacred. There was the crucifix. There were images of Jesus with a MAGA hat on. And I said, what is going on here? And I said, I better look at my own church and see what's happening. So that was the birth of the book, Playing God.
Well, good for you. And, of course, we noticed this, too, and the Freedom from Religion Foundation teamed up with the Baptist Southern Baptist
Joint Committee
to issue a report on Christian nationalism at the January 6th insurrection. So, yes, that was very chilling to see that. Now, when we think of what Christian nationalists these days, we tend to think of white Protestant evangelicals. But you're saying we mustn't underestimate the U.S. bishops and what they want to do. Is that right?
Oh, far from it. In fact, the U.S. Bishops Conference, which is made up of about, 250, 207 mostly white men, mostly past middle age, have really become one of the most important forces on the right for Christian nationalism. And that's why I believe their story and my book might be of interest, even of importance, to all Americans. Certainly not just to Catholics. And you're right, Annie Laurie, about the perception of Christian nationalists being evangelical Protestants, fundamentalists, and white. But in fact, what I show very early in the book is the communion between the fundamentalist Catholics and the fundamentalist evangelicals born in the 70s, in the 1970s, among Catholics who wanted to have a return to whatever they thought the Founding Fathers' perception of the country was, as if it were a Christian nation. And they teamed up with Jerry Falwell. In fact, it was a man named Paul Weyrich who was the godfather of so many institutions that we see now on the far right.
The Heritage Foundation, yeah.
Heritage Foundation, yeah. Primarily, but also many others that I talk about. And he knew that his crusade needed foot soldiers, didn't have enough of them among Catholics, and went to Jerry Falwell and said, you know, and by the way, at that time, the big efforts of the evangelical white people was fighting integration by operating private schools. And Paul Weyrich said to Jerry Falwell, look, together we can make a return to our founding fathers' philosophy, and we can do it with a moral majority. He invented that term. And he said, you know, segregation is not, our integration is not a very attractive, is not a very attractive a vehicle for this. Abortion is. And from that time, there has been a partnership between the white evangelicals you talk about and the Catholic conservatives the Catholic conservatives today are a very powerful triad of the bishops, the wealthy Catholic elites, and the Catholics on the Supreme Court. That is the majority of the Supreme Court.
Yes, that's right. And a lot of people forget that. I'm glad to see that you point out in your book that Paul Weyrich, a Catholic, was also one of those persons who wanted to stop the ERA. And that's where we kind of started seeing the Protestant fundamentalists and the conservative Catholics working, if not hand in hand, at least together, to defeat the Equal Rights Amendment.
Yeah.
And
yes.
And Mormons.
Yes. The Equal Rights Amendment was warred against in a campaign headed by Phyllis Schlafly, a very important Catholic figure in her time. And we still don't have the Equal Rights Amendment, thanks to her crusade.
Right.
In union with Paul Weyrich. So this combination of the white Catholic fundamentalist evangelicals and the Catholics of today who are ultra-conservative, and by the way, they
are not the majority of Catholics. The majority of Catholics follow and favor and admire Pope Francis, whereas the Catholic bishops in America as a unit dig in their heels against the policies of Pope Francis.
That's what I was going to say. I wonder
if
the reason that we don't think of Catholicism with Christian nationalism is that when you do polls, the majority of Catholics today have become so much more liberal than their church. Isn't it the hierarchy and key players that are so conservative?
You know, when you say their church, it's a very interesting term, because since Vatican II, which was a very important revolutionary meeting in the 1960s of all the bishops and, you know, lots of important Catholics, the church was defined as the people of God. That is, that the bishops and the clergy and the ordinary laity had equal responsibility for defining and carrying forth the mission of the church. And that is something that is just not recognized by the American bishops. And that is expressed in many ways I show in the book. Yeah. And the American bishops are really anomalous in terms of the universal church, that is, the church in other countries. And the Pope has said, hey, I know where the opposition is coming from. You know, he has a great sense of humor. And he understands that the American church, which is very, very powerful internationally in terms of the church, and of course very powerful nationally, does not go along with his more open arms, less doctrinaire version of what the church should be.
Uh-huh. And you point out in your book that the American bishops are influenced more by big money, unfettered, unregulated capitalism, and all of those selfish, greedy values. And in fact, the U.S. conference is backed by a bunch of what you call dark money. Is that the big difference? American Catholic bishops are driven by this capitalistic ideology?
This is the largest, most powerful capitalist country in the world. The bishops, the most conservative bishops, know where their bread is buttered. These Catholics who support the most conservative bishops are the same ones that have their names on the school auditoriums and the various make the various donations. Many of them are associated with fossil fuel companies. And what you're dealing with is bishops in a country like this up against, I mean, I'm saying that broadly, a Pope who has come out against unfettered capitalism, who dismisses or rather criticizes fossil fuel companies and extractive industries for contributing to global warming, which he sees as man-made. You know, this is a Pope who was a scientist before he became a priest, and his encyclical of 2015 called Laudato Si, praise be, about the environment and the importance of taking care of the earth, is one of the most important documents of the modern age. I'm not the one who's saying that, but many, many, many people are saying that. I talk about it in the book. And you do not have support for that whatsoever among the American bishops.
We have to take a break.
Yeah, we do have to take a break. We're talking with author Mary Jo McConaughey about her book, Playing God, American Catholic Bishops in the Far Right. There's so much to talk with you about. When we come back, maybe we can talk about your chapter, Unholy Trinity, Clarence Thomas, Leonard Leo, Virginia Thomas, and maybe touch at least a little on the bishops and what they're doing about Black Lives Matter, which might surprise you.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom from Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. And we're continuing our conversation with Mary Jo McConaughey, author of the new book, just came out in March, Playing God, American Catholic Bishops in the Far Right. And one of the comments she makes in the book I really appreciate is how early in America's history, many of the immigrants were Catholics who were despised and marginalized who worked for state-church separation. But she writes that now it appears that the oppressed have become the oppressor.
So welcome back, Mary Jo. And I wanted to talk about your chapter called Unholy Trinity, Clarence Thomas, Leonard Leo, Virginia Thomas. And just this week, we saw another revelation from Pope Publica about a trip that Alito took many years ago, a very expensive Alaskan trip that Leonard Leo helped to put together. So tell us more about this.
Yes. What I write about in Unholy Trinity chapter of Playing God is about three Catholic individuals, Clarence Thomas, Leonard Leo, and Ginny Thomas, who are really shaped by their Catholic points of view, and they are friends. And I want to say that Ginny Thomas is not as well known as Clarence Thomas and Leonard Leo, but she is also important in that she, of course, is Clarence Thomas's wife and a friend of Leonard Leo's, and she is the bridge to the evangelical Catholic and other right wingers, and this is very important. We talked about this earlier in the program. And Clarence Thomas, as you know, made a comment in his dissent in the Dobbs decision that overthrew in the overthrowing of Roe versus Wade, that said now we must consider other issues such as gay marriage and contraception, both of which are anathema to Catholics. So their Catholic culture, and Leonard Leo, of course, is the mega donor to the Federalist Society and many other, a whole spider web of right-wing groups that affect our everyday lives. There's a lot of dark money there. But at any rate, I think the Catholic culture of these three individuals and of the Supreme Court is very important. You mentioned Alito. He's also Catholic and makes his judgments very much according to Catholic doctrine. I'm not saying he follows Catholic doctrine and the judgments, but they are akin to Catholic doctrine.
Yes, well, and Leonard Leo does seem to be the puppeteer here, holding the strings, doesn't he?
Yes, and he has recently become a mega puppeteer because he just got the biggest donation in U.S. history for a political donation, $1.6 billion, that's with a B. And so he is able now, this is from an Illinois businessman, he is able now to finance these concepts, which would like to make the separation between church and state a gossamer curtain, if anything, but definitely tear down the wall. Yeah.
Well, they are busy doing that right now. We're waiting for two more decisions to come down that look like privileging religion over the free exercise clause over the establishment clause. And at FFRF, we always say you can't have true religious liberty, freedom of religion, if you don't have freedom from religion in our government. So it's so concerning.
It's very concerning, and I think it needs. I think all Americans, either, you know, whether they have religion, whether they're believers or are not believers, need to look at who these very, very right-wing players are, even if they're Catholic bishops.
Yeah.
So we only have about 2 minutes left, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about something that I should have been more aware of, which is that the Catholic bishops have been totally silent on this Black Lives Matter, or at least after George Floyd's death. And you even cite an instance where a priest in Indiana called the Black Lives Matter protesters maggots and parasites. He was suspended. But tell us more about that.
Well, it's a very important story, and it certainly shocked me in doing my research that Catholics had always dismissed or discriminated against Black Catholics. And with Black Lives Matter, by the way, several of whose founders were inspired and followers of liberation theology, a Catholic force, would that they had ignored it, as you say. In fact, they considered it, many of the bishops, including the president of the bishops' conference, considered it a kind of secular religion which needed to be stopped. And this is something that is just absolutely heinous, that is the lack of support for Black Catholics and Blacks in general in the country. Hundreds of state efforts have been made since 2020 to limit voting for quote-unquote minority groups. And the bishops have been silent on this. You know, we Catholics believe that there are, you know, we have all kinds of sins. And so we believe there are sins of commission and sins of omission. And what I say in the book is that this looks like a very serious sin of omission on the part of the Catholic bishops.
So I have to commit a sin here and end the show right in the middle of your sentence, Mary Jo. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Mary Jo McConaughey is author of the new book. It's called Playing God, American Catholic Bishops and the Far Right. We also want to thank our listeners to Free Thought Radio in Philadelphia and in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, to WOOMLP, to Madison, Wisconsin, WID and WMUU, in Janesville, Wisconsin, to WADR, in Bryan, Texas, to KEOS, in San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, Columbia, Missouri, KOPN, Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, Bellows Falls, Vermont, WOOL, Kingston, Rhode Island, WRIU, Ithaca, New York, WRFI. If you're listening to the podcast, as many thousands of you do, give us a thumbs up on your provider and tell your friends and family to find out more about Freethought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And you can also find out more about the new podcast, We Dissent, featuring female attorneys working for state church separation. Ask for more information at ffrf.org or just join us. You not only support our radio program, but our important, vital work for separation of church and state. So you can check us out at our website, ffrf.org. And don't forget to tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.
Welcome to Faith That Matters. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. FFRF is the nation's largest association of freethinkers. That means atheists and agnostics, and works as a state church watchdog to defend our constitutional separation of church and state. Join us in our vital work at ffrf.org or sign up for a sample of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. Did you know that many of the best-loved composers of the Great American Songbook were not religious? The writers or composers of Over the Rainbow, Summertime, Night and Day, and even White Christmas did not believe in a God. This week and next week, my co-host Dan Barker, an accomplished jazz pianist, will take us on a guided tour of the Freethought influence on American music. Dan is at the Diane Yule Steinway Piano here in Freethought Hall, Madison, Wisconsin.
It's Only a Paper Moon. That song was written by, the words were written by Yip Harburg, who was a non-believer. It's true that there's been a wealth of beautiful music in the world that's inspired by religion, but the world has also been greatly enriched by the work of composers and songwriters who were not religious. In previous shows, we've talked about many of the classical composers who were atheists or agnostics. Today, I want to talk about the Great American Songbook. Composers and lyricists of popular American music who were decidedly non-religious go way back in our history. Over the river and through the woods to grandfather's house we go was written by a woman named Lydia Maria Child, considered the first woman of letters in the United States. She wrote the lyrics to that popular song, which is often sung at Thanksgiving. Lydia Maria Child was raised Calvinist, but she rejected that faith and she joined the creedless Unitarians. In her book, The Progress of Religious Ideas, Lydia Maria Child said, "It is impossible to exaggerate the evil work theology has done in the world. What a blooming paradise would the whole earth be if the same amount of intellect, labor, and zeal had been expended on science, agriculture, and the arts." She later defined true religion as simply working for the welfare of the human race. Then Stephen Foster, first great American popular songwriter. He wrote both words and music. Stephen Foster was born on the 4th of July in 1826. Which was the 50th birthday of the United States, the same day Jefferson and Adams died. Stephen Foster was a nonconformist. He never joined a church. He rarely went to church. He lived like a nonbeliever. Of his own accord, Foster wrote only secular music. Oh, Susanna, Camptown Races, Old Folks at Home, Suwannee River, My Old Kentucky Home. I Dream of Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair. At the end of his life, when he was poor and hungry at rock bottom, when he really wasn't getting any royalties for all of his songs, Stephen Foster needed money to survive. So he composed some Sunday school songs using some of his earlier secular music. The biographer George Eales wrote, "Foster, who never expressed much interest in religion, who had resisted the urgings of his sisters to join the church, he wrote nearly 30 songs for Sunday schools. He hadn't found God, but he had found a publisher. Stephen Foster's positive, natural, anti-Calvinist views can be seen in his song, Some Folks Do. Some folks like to sigh, some folks do, some folks do. Some folks long to die, but that's not me nor you. Long live the merry, merry heart that laughs by night and day. Like the queen of mirth, no matter what some folks say. Some folks fret and scold, some folks do, some folks do. They'll soon be dead and cold, but that's not me nor you. Long live the merry, merry heart that laughs by night and day. Like the queen of mirth, no matter what some folks say. The lyrics for Foster's 1846 utopian song, There's a Good Time Coming, do not point to an afterlife or to a theocracy. They yearn rather for a time of tolerance when religious divisiveness shall be eliminated. The lyrics say, shameful rivalries of creed shall not make the martyr bleed in the good time coming. Religion shall be shorn of pride and flourish all the stronger. And charity shall trim her lamp, wait a little longer. Scott Joplin was the king of ragtime, and Scott Joplin was not religious. He never wrote religious music. He was married in a home, not in a church, nor was his funeral conducted in a church. Joplin's early musical career took place in centers of entertainment, not in churches. He played the piano in a brothel and in a club, the famous Maple Leaf Club, that was shut down due to pressure from local churches whose pastors were ashamed of the, quote, iniquitous practices that were taking place in those establishments. You know what those iniquitous practices were? Dancing. No wonder Joplin rejected the church. Because, as biographer Edwin Berlin notes, the churches rejected what was important to him, ragtime, dance, and the theater. Whatever Joplin's private views may have been, it is clear that his music was not inspired by religion. Scott Joplin wrote a musical, it's called Tremonesia, which was, for its day, quite feminist, with an intelligent female lead, and quite irreverent, in which he mocks the useless pastor in the musical, whom he calls Reverend All Talk. And he encourages education, not religion, as the solution to the world's problems. All the things you are, written by Jerome Kern. Jerome Kern was known as the father of American music. Jerome Kern created the American style of Broadway musicals, breaking away from the earlier European style. The 1927 musical Showboat, with lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein, was groundbreaking in its integration of music and story. Songs such as Old Man River Kern said that was his favorite song of every song that he ever wrote. He also wrote The Way You Look Tonight, which you hear at a lot of weddings. Dorothy Fields. That one won the 1936 Academy Award song. Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. The Last Time I Saw Paris, A Fine Romance, Long Ago and Far Away, dozens more Jerome Kern melodies have defined what it means to be a standard. Raised in a nominally Jewish family of German immigrants, Jerome Kern did not believe in God. He never consciously felt himself a member of the Jewish faith, which is why he would work on the Sabbath. He said, "I don't let a single day pass without writing," he confessed. His religion, writes the biographer Michael Friedland, his religion was music and his lifestyle. In fact, his lifestyle kept him up partying very late one night, causing him to miss the ship to England the next morning. That ship was the ill-fated Lusitania. Jerome Kern's motto was, "Life is to be enjoyed." He wrote nothing and said nothing about God or religion. Did you know that the writer of the song, God Bless America, did not believe in God? Or that the song was intended as an anti-war anthem? And did you know that the same man who also wrote the song, White Christmas, actually said that he hated Christmas? Irving Berlin is probably the greatest composer of popular American music, with hundreds of enduring hits. Blue Skies and Always, I'll be loving you always, with a love that's true always. There's no business like show business. Anything you can do, I can do better. He wrote the song Cheek to Cheek, Alexander's Ragtime Band, just to name a few of the hundreds of songs that he wrote. Raised in a nominally Jewish family, Irving Berlin was never observant and never believed. Patriotism was Irving Berlin's true religion, writes the biographer Lawrence Berggreen. Irving Berlin's daughter, Mary Ellen, wrote that he's not a religious person, but does not forget who his people are. God Bless America is not about God. It's about America. Irving Berlin wrote the song not to represent his views, but the views of characters in a 1918 musical. He ended up disliking the song, so he pulled it from the musical. 20 years later, the singer Kate Smith dusted it off as an anti-war anthem when the song then became popular. And White Christmas? It's not about Christmas or the birth of Jesus. It's about the season. Irving Berlin told his daughter that he actually hated Christmas, that he and his wife both hated Christmas. "We only did it for you children," he said. Irving Berlin sometimes poked fun at faith. In 1922, he wrote a song called "Pack Up Your Sins and Go to the Devil in Hades," which was mocking the religious censors of his day. "Pack Up Your Sins and Go to the Devil in Hades" is the perfect antidote to "God Bless America." Pack up your sins and go to the devil in Hades. You'll meet the finest of gentlemen and the finest of ladies. They'd rather be down below than up above. Hades is full of thousands of Joneses and Browns, O'Houlihans, Cohens and Bradys. You'll hear a heavenly tune that went to the devil because those jazz bands, they started picking it, then put a trick in it, a jazzy kick in it. They've got a couple of old reformers in heaven making them go to bed at 11. Pack up your sins and go to the devil and you'll never have to go to bed at all.
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective association of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate, just like our founding fathers intended. Please support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
"It Ain't Necessarily So" was written by Ira Gershwin and George Gershwin. Who would doubt that the world has been enriched by Rhapsody in Blue, American in Paris, Porgy and Bess, and hundreds of popular songs for which George Gershwin wrote the music, and his brother Ira Gershwin wrote the words. They include "The Man I Love," "Loves Me," "It's Wonderful," "Fascinating Rhythm," "Lady Be Good," "Someone to Watch Over Me," "Someone to Watch Over Me," "Strike Up the Band," "How Long Has This Been Going On," "I Could Cry Salty Tears," "Where Have I Been All These Years," "How Long Has This Been Going On," I've got a crush on you. Embraceable you. I got rhythm, but not for me. They all laughed. Let's call the whole thing off. They can't take that away from me. A foggy day in London town. Nice work if you can get it. You can get it if you try. Love walked in. Our love is here to stay, and so many more beloved songs. George and Ira Gershwin wrote the songs and music for the groundbreaking opera, Porgy and Bess, which was considered a flop at the time of George's death, but is now a great American opera. It includes the song Summertime. Includes the song It Ain't Necessarily So. The Gershwins were raised in a family of non-believing Jewish immigrants from Russia. Their household was so secular that their mother used to draw the curtains during the Sabbath and during the Jewish festivals so that their neighbors couldn't see that they had not lit the ceremonial candles. Ira once rewrote the Passover Seder as a comic vaudeville performance, complete with a silly top hat and a cane. The lyrics to It Ain't Necessarily So from Porgy and Bess are quite free-thinking. The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. One of the alternate verses that did not make it into the show, but was kept on hand just in case of encores, said this. Way back in 5000 B.C., old Adam and Eve had to flee. Sure, they did that deed in the Garden of Eden, but why chastise you and me? Now, let me play one of my favorite Gershwin songs. It's called Our Love is Here to Stay.
Barker will return next week for part two of our look at the freethinkers who helped create the Great American Songbook. Thank you for watching Free Thought Matters, because free thought matters.
I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Welcome to Free Thought Matters. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, co-founder and co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which produces this weekly show. Visit FFRF.org to learn more about our critical work to keep religion out of government and public policy and to promote the views of non-believers. Ask for a sample of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, or join. We're continuing our two-part series on the unsung freethought history of the Great American Songbook. Famous composers like Yip Harburg, George and Ira Gershwin, Irving Berlin, Cole Porter, Rodgers and Hammerstein, and many others were not religious. Their natural freethought perspective informed their music. Let's join FFRF co-president and jazz pianist Dan Barker as he continues leading us through the history of the creative and irreverent personalities who wrote the Great American Songbook.
Somewhere over the rainbow, according to the American Film Institute's list of the top 100 movie songs, Over the Rainbow is number one. That's one of those songs that everybody knows. The music was written by Harold Arlen, and the words are by Yip Harburg, E-Y, Yip Harburg, who also wrote the lyrics to It's Only a Paper Moon, Brother Can You Spare a Dime, April in Paris. April in Paris, songs for many musicals and movies, as well as the lyrics and much of the screenwriting for The Wizard of Oz and the musical Finian's Rainbow. Yip Harburg was born the same year as Ira Gershwin, both to Jewish Russian immigrants. They attended the same school. They sat next to each other in class. Yip and Ira discovered that they both loved words, and they developed a friendship that lasted a lifetime. As a teenager, Yip realized he had no religious feelings after his older brother died. When both of his parents died, the shock left him an agnostic. "I threw over my religion," Yip said. "I began seeing the world in a whole new light. The house of God never had much appeal for me. Anyhow, I found a substitute temple, the theater." In 1932, while the country was in depression and the presidential candidate, FDR, was advising everybody to sing happy songs, what Well, Yip Harburg and Jay Gorney were looking around. Jay Gorney is a composer, another Russian Jewish immigrant that I'll talk about in a minute. They wrote a realistic song about the sufferings of actual life. Brother, Can You Spare a Dime became a huge hit. It launched Yip on a career as a lyricist. First I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. First I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? In 1943, Yip Harburg wrote the first all-black Broadway musical. It was called Cabin in the Sky. The movie featured Ethel Waters, Eddie Rochester Anderson, Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, and Lena Horne. One of the songs Yip wrote for Lena Horne was Ain't It the Truth? Life is short, short, brother, ain't it the truth? And there is no other, ain't it the truth? You gotta rock that rainbow while you still got your youth. Oh, ain't it the solid truth? Pretty free-thinking lyrics. Yip Harburg was blacklisted for 10 years because of his liberal views. He was not a communist, but he knew some people who were, so that got him in trouble. Yip also wrote, besides music, he also wrote some light satiric verses poking holes in all things sacred. Some poems with titles like Do Unto Others, Atheist, How Odd of God. These poems, including some newly discovered verses, have been republished in the book Rhymes for the Irreverent. My favorite of those poems is called Lead Kindly Light. Where Bishop Patrick crossed the street, an X now marks the spot. The light of God was with him, but the traffic light was not. In one of his newly discovered poems, Yip observed, they who live on love and laughter don't mess around with the hereafter. Yip Harburg did not believe in an afterlife over the rainbow. He was inspired by beauty, hope, and humanity. He knew there is a place in the human heart where dreams really do come true. The composer of Brother, Can You Spare a Dime was Jay Gorney. And like the lyricist Yip Harburg, Jay Gorney was a non-believer who also ended up being blacklisted. Jay Gorney is the man who discovered Shirley Temple and for whom he wrote her first movie song, Baby Take a Bow. Gorney wrote such standards as You're My Thrill, What Wouldn't I Do for That Man, plus hundreds of popular songs for theater, film, and television. His widow, Sandra Gorney, told us on Free Thought Radio that they were not a religious family. Although born into a family of Polish-Jewish immigrants, Jay became more involved with social causes than with any religious heritage. Jay's entire life, Sandra said, was dedicated to helping his fellow man and woman as an artist and as a concerned human being. This past weekend, one of my granddaughters started singing the song, Doe a deer, a female deer, ray a drop of golden sun. Everybody knows that song. The songwriter, Richard Rodgers, was one of the great composers of musical theater, and he was, by his own words, an atheist. With the lyricist Larry Hart, and later with the lyricist Oscar Hammerstein II, Rodgers wrote 39 great Broadway musicals, including The Sound of Music, Babes in Arms, Pal Joey, Oklahoma, Carousel, South Pacific. And also the movie State Fair. Many of the standards in the Great American Songbook emerged from musicals by Richard Rodgers, including songs like Blue Moon. Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. Getting to Know You, Have You Met Miss Jones, If I Loved You, Isn't It Romantic, It Might As Well Be Spring, Manhattan, My Favorite Things, My Funny Valentine, My Heart Stood Still, Some Enchanted Evening, Spring Is Here, This Can't Be Love, and You Took Advantage of Me. Richard Rodgers' wife, Dorothy, said, "We are not religious. We are social Jews." Biographer Merle Seacrest writes, "Those around him knew that Rodgers was an atheist. At the age of 12, his daughter, Mary, asked her father whether he believed in God, and he answered that he believed in people. If somebody is really sick, I don't pray to God," he said. "I look for the best doctor in town." On the subject of inspiration, Rogers said, "That's a bad word for what happens to me when I'm writing. What I do is not as fancy as some people may think. It is simply using the medium to express emotion. This isn't a question of sitting on the top of a hill and waiting for inspiration to strike. It's work." People have said, "You're a genius." I say, "No, it's my job." Richard Rodgers was not inspired by faith. He was inspired by the natural world, like the moon.
We'll be back with more music on Free Thought Matters after this break.
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective association of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate, just like our founding fathers intended.
please support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Now, another composer, Frank Lesser. I'd like to get you on a slow boat to China, all to myself alone. Frank Lesser is best known for writing the musical Guys and Dolls, with such songs as Luck Be a Lady, I'll Know, If I Were a Bell, and also the musical How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, has the songs The Brotherhood of Man and I Believe in You. Frank Lesser was a non-believer. His daughter told us on Free Thought Radio that her father's family were Jewish by blood, but not by thought or deed. No religion was practiced at home. Frank Lesser wrote the lyrics to Heart and Soul, and he wrote the words and the music to many other songs, including Baby, It's Cold Outside, I Don't Want to Walk Without You, Baby, which Irving Berlin said was the best song ever written, Slow Boat to China, Standing on the Corner, Two Sleepy People, the music for the movie Hans Christian Andersen, and one of my all-time favorite songs, What Are You Doing New Year's Eve? Charles Strauss. Put on a happy face. The composer of the musical Annie, The Sun Will Come Up Tomorrow, Bye Bye Birdie, and the song Those Were the Days from the TV show All in the Family. Remember that? That composer, Charles Strauss, does not believe in God. Those memorable melodies and many more have become an inseparable part of the fabric of modern popular American music. Strauss's songs have been performed by almost everyone, including Barbra Streisand, Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Bobby Darin, Mandy Patinkin, Harry Connick Jr. Strauss has written the score to more than 30 stage musicals, 14 scores for Broadway, 4 Hollywood films, including Bonnie and Clyde and All Dogs Go to Heaven, 2 orchestral works, and an opera. His main collaborator was the lyricist Lee Adams. Charles Strauss is not a believer. I grudgingly went to Sunday Hebrew school, he writes in his memoirs, but we were not what you would call religious, and this has stuck with me to this day. He describes a full and purpose-filled life in that memoir, working for music as well as civil rights. He traveled with the actress Butterfly McQueen, also a lifelong atheist, experiencing firsthand racial discrimination in the South. And he marched for civil rights with Sammy Davis Jr. in Selma, Alabama in 1965. On Free Thought Radio, Charles Strauss told us, "Though my father was not an atheist, I am. I've been persuaded for a great number of years now by the wars, the calamities, the religious antagonism among people, and their stupid rules." Charles Strauss says he thinks the reason he has written so many happy songs is because, having grown up during the Depression, optimism became his way out. "Put on a happy face. The sun will come up tomorrow," he tells us, with no thought of an afterlife. Now Stephen Sondheim. In the Clown, Stephen Sondheim, the great Broadway composer, is not religious. Sondheim wrote the lyrics for West Side Story and the musical Gypsy. His first score as a composer and lyricist was for A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, followed by Anyone Can Whistle, Pacific Overtures, Company, Follies, A Little Night Music, Sweeney Todd, Merrily We Roll Along, Sunday in the Park with George, Into the Woods, Assassins, and The Frogs. His songs range from singable show tune hits, such as Send in the Clowns, to the densely lyrical operatic pieces that rely on integrated music and dialogue. The biographer Meryl Seacrest writes, "As for religious instruction, Stephen Joshua Sondheim received none at all. He never had a bar mitzvah ceremony. He knew nothing about the observances of the Jewish calendar. And he did not enter a synagogue until he was 19 years old." In the song Comedy Tonight from A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Sondheim seems to assert that religion is boring. Nothing with gods, nothing with fate. Weighty affairs will just have to wait. Nothing that's formal, nothing that's normal. No recitations to recite. Open up the curtain. Comedy tonight. The music of Stephen Sondheim, like all of the other songwriters I've talked about on this show, was not inspired by religion or by faith. It is human music, natural music. Now let me end with a song that I got to write with Charles Strauss. Charles asked me to send him some lyrics, which he then set to music. It's called Poor Little Me. The multitudes mumble mythologies without end, but me, I have trouble with ologies that pretend to show what can't be shown, to know what can't be known. Lutherans have liturgies, Calvinists have creeds, Muslims have their minarets, Catholics have their beads, Methodists have methods, holy truths to ascertain, but poor little me, I only have a brain. Bishops transubstantiate, Shintos ring their bells, Transcendentalists meditate while Wiccans weave their spells. Hindus chant the mantra when they can't relieve the pain. But poor little me, I only have a brain. So fearful of the Netherland, believers band together. Unhappy with the weatherman, the Zunis wave a feather. They dance in circles to demand Great Spirit send some rain. But what do you do if you only have a brain? Quakers quake and Shakers shake and Jews eat kosher food. Rastafarians wear their hair in pious gratitude. They all boast of miracles that no one can explain. But poor little me, I only have a brain. So fearful of the Netherlands, believers band together. Unhappy with the weatherman, the Zunis wave a feather. They dance in circles to demand Great Spirit send some rain. But what do you do if you only have a brain? Quakers quake, Shakers shake, and Jews eat kosher food. Rastafarians wear their hair in pious gratitude. They all boast of miracles that no one can explain. But poor little me, I only have a brain.
Thanks, Dan, for that fascinating and entertaining trip through the free thought history of the Great American Songbook. If you missed the first episode of this series or any of our previous Free Thought Matters episodes, go to YouTube and search for FFRF Free Thought Matters. Thank you for watching Free Thought Matters, because free thought matters.
Hi,